Good morning and welcome. We are so grateful today to have my friend Dr. Robin Pashby here to speak with us this week and next about coping with ambiguous losses, which we've all experienced. Dr. Pashby is a clinical health psychologist with a small group psychology practice in Washington, D.C. She loves her work, and she helps people living with numerous serious health and medical conditions in coping and building their resilience, along with reducing the shame and stigma associated with some of those chronic conditions. She's a mom and a dog mom and spends her free time walking in the beautiful parks of Washington, D.C., learning Spanish and traveling the world. Thank you so much, Robin, for being with us and for taking the time to put this wonderful seminar together.
Thank you so much. Just to check, everyone can hear me okay?
Yep, you're coming through real clear.
Great, great. I would like to begin actually with a very short story that I was given permission to share. It's written by one of my longtime patients. I won't share name, obviously. And it was written back in 2020, but I just want to share it with you because as a writer, this person does a better job than I. They appear at random moments, like apparitions from a time and place that do not exist, but might have. My Google Calendar alerts don't seem to realize the world has changed. So every appointment or meeting date that ever appeared in an email or on a hotel reservation website or airline confirmation pops up on my phone, promising an exciting change to these unchanging days. Alert, stay at the Parker Meridian, New York. Check in 3 p.m., my phone buzzes to tell me. This was a trip planned many months ago in which my niece, who recently moved to Europe, was going to come with her husband and two adorable sons. We would go to the zoo, visit the grandmas at the beach, and build the grandest sandcastle ever. But of course, no. And so the alerts arrive, cheerful reminders of long canceled events, haircuts, concerts, backgammon tournaments, and California vacations, times and dates all faded into mocking irrelevance. My wife says they're like the names and phone numbers of relatives and friends you keep in your address book long after they've died, because you can't quite bring yourself to delete them. But I didn't make that connection until I was talking to my therapist a few weeks ago, trying to give a name to the emotions we're all dealing with as we realize how long this is going to go on. It's a sadness, I said, a longing for what might have been. It borders on depression, but that's not quite it. And then she gave me a name for it. What you're experiencing, she told me, is grief. My first reaction was embarrassment. I mean, yes, we're all sad, but grief? That's an emotion that you save for when you lose a loved one. Isn't it wrong to compare what I'm going through to what the relatives of the dead and dying are going through? Obviously, many people are dealing with the grief that comes with loss of life, she told me, but grief looks a lot of different ways. We're grieving the loss of anticipated events, of human touch, of the chance to be productive, she told me. Loss of simple pleasures, of getting the kids out the door in the morning, going to Starbucks, loss of meaning, loss of purpose. And so, she says, we need to begin the long, difficult process of learning how to grieve. I was the therapist in that story, as you might have presumed. And so just to highlight for you, I've been talking about this concept of grief and ambiguous loss for quite some time. This is one of my favorite quotes on the topic. It says, you cannot trust a man, insert pronoun here, who cannot grieve. And it's by Mr. Somme, who is from West Africa. He died in 2021. He's a spiritual education researcher and guru. So today, as we talk about ambiguous grief, I'd like to use the five gates of grief, which is a concept proposed by Francis Weller, to be our roadmap for this. But before we dive in exactly to ambiguous grief more fully, I'd like to share this graphic. For anyone out there who is a visual learner like myself, there was something about looking at this graph that really helped me think through what's happening. So if you're not familiar, the Nebraska Strong Recovery Project was a FEMA-funded project during COVID to help Nebraskans dealing with the emotional and mental aspects of COVID. Now, it was based on studies from back in 2000, actually, where it looked at the impact of something like a hurricane or an earthquake or some sort of disastrous with a single day impact. And what you see here is that looking left to right, the emotional lows and emotional highs are here on this vertical axis. And on this other one is time. So pre-disaster, there's warning, there's threat, there's building, and then impact. And I don't know about for you, but for me, I will remember Friday, March 13th, as clear as day for the rest of my life. And I don't know if that's the impact exactly of COVID and what we've all been through, but something like that. And I'm going to take you through these stages because I think it helps elucidate and describe and normalize what we've all been experiencing. So in the heroic phase, that phase one, this is the time when the emotional highs are intense. So people are dealing with a deep sense of altruism and gratitude, but we are equally terrified, fearful, and just devastated sadness. And then after that sort of initial phase, so maybe March, April, May, June-ish of 2020, we went into and perhaps spent a long time in the honeymoon phase. This is when there was this collective sense of gratitude, not just for our own survival and for the survival of those we love, if we were lucky enough to experience survival, but also public officials were praised for their role in saving lives and organizing relief efforts. This is the time when teachers were seen as heroes for figuring out how to move to virtual learning on a fly. Healthcare workers were seen as heroes. Government agencies like FEMA and others were really praised for organizing and building these emergency hospitals and all the things that you might be remembering. Inevitably, as time moves on and we become a year in, many months in, there's this disillusionment phase. And so this is a time when those helping agencies and government are no longer seen as heroes. In fact, quite the opposite. So there's this spike in anger and frustration and feeling just this desire to break out. And as you may remember, these protests over masks that came in schools and in businesses and in the military and in governments and all these other places is just one example of this disillusionment phase. And this phase can last for years. And then slowly the reconstruction phase comes, and this can last many, many, many years. This is the long-term phase of recovery, and it is marked by anniversaries and memorials. And you see this so clearly at the anniversaries of 9/11, which we could also use as an example of this sort of period of time and how emotional responses change over time. And I put here just a newspaper story about a wall of memories talking about the lives who were lost. So if you look at this graph again, we have this impact and then this heroic phase where people are celebrated, followed by this community cohesion in the honeymoon phase, quickly descending into the emotional lows of disillusionment. And unsurprisingly, if you look here down at the bottom, you see there's trigger events. And so if we think about this with COVID, we might think about examples of new variants forming, other types of things that just feel so risky for people. And it really is this up and down experience, emotional highs, emotional lows. And here we are now, we are in the phase of reconstruction, right? We're slowly working ourselves out of this disillusionment phase, we can hope. And I circled here that we are working through grief. Now, many of us, I was fortunate enough not to lose a loved one directly to COVID, but for those of us like me who weren't, many of us experienced grief in many forms prior to this. And obviously people who lost loved ones, which I know you'll touch on later in this month, dealt with intense grief. But I think it's really important to remember that even if you were not someone who experienced significant personal death or loss in your family, that you still have permission to be working through grief up to many years later, which is where we find ourselves now. So when I give talks, I find that one of the best ways to connect to my audience and to have you think about what your experiences are is to share a tiny personal story. And I'm going to do this. And while I do, I just want you all to think that I know that every single one of you listening to this live in person or on record have some version of this story related to COVID. Yours might not look like mine, but here we go. So these are, I went back through my phone and looked at my photo highlights the week of March 6th, 2020. And the reason this date stands out to me is because it's my daughter's birthday. So it was an exciting week for us in our home. This is me here with my training team. I was at the gym a couple mornings a week. And this particular week, they happened to ask us to take a picture for their social media account. So there I was, surrounded by friends that I had made through working out at our gym. This is actually a picture of my dog at the dog park playing with one of his dog friends. and I just thought it was such a cute action shot. This is an event that I attended that week with a group of women called the Lady Docs. And it's a group of professional women, all MDs, PhDs, and so forth. And we get together, or we did get together in person, maybe once a month, once every 2 or 3 months, and have a meal and share just stories of our expertise and network and collaborate. And I find these women really important supports in my professional life. This is me on my daughter's birthday on March 6, 2020. I went to her nursery school and I read a story to her class as a way of celebrating her birthday. And later that weekend, we had a birthday party for her, and there's my daughter, and there I am bringing her cake in, and her Nana is there in the blue coat, and she's surrounded by her friends. Her Nana came over that night, and she worked on a puzzle with my little peanut, and there she is later at the park, surrounded again by her friends. So then I looked at the photos in my phone beginning the week of March 13th, so 1 week later. And this is my daughter playing on a swing that we put in our front yard. We live in Washington, D.C., and we don't really have much of a backyard. But we have a tree out in front of our house, sort of between the sidewalk and the street, and we hung a wood board with a swing on it for her. This is a picture of the gym where I would do some of my workouts and we weren't allowed in. This was an example. I took my dog for a walk and we came across one of the entrances to the dog parks, and it was closed by the Department of Parks and Recs. Oh, this breaks my heart to look at. This is my daughter doing a virtual play date. At some point during that week or two after the lockdown happened. This was a real picture of a Target that I went to in the early days trying to stock up on supplies. You won't be surprised to know that I didn't stock up much that day. This is an example of my daughter who really loves to move her body, trying to do online school in the weeks following COVID. It was not very successful, as you might imagine. Turns out online kindergarten is challenging. And these are examples of my husband and I trying to work from home with a five-year-old in the house full-time. Not exactly a smooth process. These are my 83 and 86-year-old aunt and uncle who are very important in my life and who didn't know my daughter very well. And I was trying to keep her connected to them virtual by Zoom. And this is a picture my daughter spontaneously drew of going to school. Clearly a Zoom room. So as I think about those pictures and look and share them with you, thank you for looking at those with me. I want to remind us all that people grieve appropriately the loss of life. But we can also grieve the loss of living. Some of the ways that grief shows up for us is in answering and asking these questions of ourselves over and over and over again. Questioning, is the world a safe place? Something that perhaps prior to COVID, many of us were fortunate enough not to have to ask ourselves. Questioning, will I be okay? Will I be able to get healthcare? What if I get sick? Will my child or my grandchild be able to go to school safely? Will I lose my job? Will I lose my savings? And the recognition that things are different, that we'll never get that time back, that you perhaps are just not the same. And for some of us, pieces of this lead to this nagging point. I wish things could go back to the way they used to be. I read a really great article by Robert Niemeyer, who is a faculty member, and he talks about how losses can include our sense of predictability, control, and justice, and our belief that we can protect our children or our elderly loved ones. For any of you in the audience in the sandwich generation with me, fortunate enough to have one living parent in her 80s and a young daughter, both of these, the fear that in protecting myself or my daughter that I risk my mom or and vice versa, it's just that the loss of the sense that I can protect them has been enormous. So Ted shared with me that at the end of January, you'll receive some guidance on how to cope with losing people. And I think that is so critically important and under talked about. But I also want to know and acknowledge that losing places, projects, possessions, professions, and protections matters too. So when I walk around my neighborhood, I look at places that we used to go pre-COVID and closed businesses. As things began to gently open up, and I thought about, oh, I wonder if we could, you know, go to this store or something at some point. And you do a Google search and you realize that it closed a year ago. The truth is that many of us had to confront the frailty of our attachments, whether it's to our local bookstore or to the routines that sustained us throughout our pre-COVID days. So all of that is a grand lead up to this concept of ambiguous loss. And Pauline Boss is the person who's been credited with this term, excuse me. And she defines ambiguous loss as losses that are that remain unclear, that are hard to pin down, or that are not widely understood as loss. and may have no closure. So if you've ever asked yourself, or maybe you're asking yourself now, well, I wonder, is this a loss? Is it not? Should I grieve it? Should I not? Am I allowed to feel grief about this? I want to take you through our understanding of an ambiguous loss, because really we have evolved in our understanding of what ambiguous loss meant. So if you start on the left, ambiguous loss was originally reserved for unresolved loss. For example, family members who lost a service member to war without closure. What they called, what it was defined as, is a physical absence with a psychological presence. I think that's such a powerful way of thinking about it. Physical absence with a psychological presence. But pretty quickly, we began to realize that, wait, this concept actually is broader. It explains loss across many different things, including not just physical loss, like a family with a missing child or something traumatic like that, or a prisoner of war situation or something terrible, but also physical loss and psychological loss. So a family member with dementia, a family member in a coma, things like this that have a psychological absence with a physical presence. And then as we evolved even further, what we realized is that these losses include societal loss and cross-generational loss. And the example I have pictured here of this child sitting with a mask on 6 feet from his classmates is an example of a societal loss, the loss of kids' ability to just what I would call be kids the way we used to be. The complicating piece is that these losses might not be easily understood or identified. And if you have felt yourself experiencing any of these symptoms, sadness, anxiety, insomnia, fatigue, increased pain, and so many other, know that these are normal reactions to a pathological, if you will, situation. So when someone loses a family member, for example, to death, it's expected that a person is sad or anxious or can't sleep. But when a mom is worried about sending her kid to a classroom that is safe, but the kids are all sitting 6 feet apart, and the mom is laying in bed at night wondering if the kid will ever learn how to be social, that's real too. So as we begin this journey, and I hope that over the next two sessions, we will begin together to reimagine your engagement with your own grief. I think it's helpful to start at the start, which is to acknowledge that you are likely experiencing some sense of ambiguous loss. Almost all of us have experienced this as a result of COVID. Pauline Boss would argue that it's one of the most stressful kinds of loss there is. And why is that? For the many reasons we've been elucidating, which is that people don't necessarily acknowledge it. And number three, it's not your fault. My goal with you this week and next week are to learn to reconnect to your grief. I want us to learn together how to hold it and express it rather than keeping it locked down. Sometimes my patients ask me, how do I get over this? How do I get over this? And I think maybe we need to reimagine that. Maybe we need to reconnect with it. And one way of doing that that I have found tremendously helpful are these gates of grief. And if you've ever heard Frances Weller, you might be familiar with these, but if not, there's a book and some YouTube videos and so forth. And really what I think the gates of grief offer us is an opportunity to name and recognize these different types of grief, and then provide a bit of a roadmap for us. And so I think so much of the struggle with dealing with ambiguous loss is really related to the idea of we don't know what and how to do this, right? Most of us never got training in grieving the loss of a loved one. Forget grieving all of these other types of things that we've discussed. So let's go through these gates as a bit of a roadmap. And as we do that, I'm going to move a bit slowly because I want you to pause and notice what is happening inside your body. What is happening in your emotions? As we talk about these, are there particular words or phrases that stand out to you? What emerges within you in response to those words or phrases that stand out? And if you have a notebook or a piece of paper or a scratch pad next to you, I would encourage you to write down some of your thoughts, some of your emotions, some of your physical experiences, because I think that provides you first the opportunity to pause and notice, to make that connection between mind and body, but then also to be able to communicate it as we move forward. I'll open it up for a bit of discussion near the end of this, where we can do some back and forth, and this will be fruit for that discussion. So gate one of Francis Weller's Gates of Grief is everything we love, we will lose. Now, boy, this is something that as a clinical psychologist, I think I spend a lot of time thinking about and talking with my patients about, the most widely recognized and understood type of grief. Loss of life, loss of love, loss of a job or a home. So these big societal losses that most people can acknowledge. I want you to think about what comes up for you as we talk about that. Everything we love, we will lose. If we move to gate two, this is an interesting place. This is the gate that Francis Weller describes as the places that have not known love. The places where we hold the most shame, the places where we feel unlovable. These can be examples of developmental trauma, things that happened to you in childhood. Can also mean lack of connection. Those of us that may have been raised with an absent parent, emotionally absent parent, or are in a long-term relationship with a partner who is not emotionally present, the lack of connection despite a yearning for it. And then the lack of trust and security. These are the places that create deep within us shame and a sense of unlovability. Gate three is when we acknowledge the sorrows of the world. The idea that loss is so much bigger than our four walls or our extended family. The acknowledgement of loss on a planetary scale. And as I sit here in Washington, D.C. in the middle of January and it's 60 degrees outside, I am acutely aware of environmental change. As I read newspaper headlines about glaciers melting, I'm acutely aware of environmental change. But not just that, cultural losses. So when I was growing up, my family attended Native American powwows. And I was always in awe of the tradition and how little of that tradition still exists in my world and in my experiences. And then global change. So here we are coming through year three of this pandemic, And we must acknowledge there are major global changes that have resulted. So again, I'll ask you, tune in. What's coming up for you? Gate four, I think, is really powerful in the COVID world, and it's what we expected and did not receive. So this is the struggle with having the experience of having unmet needs and expectations. Now, perhaps this is something that you experienced yourself or know people who have, who've had trouble with family planning, who didn't end up partnered and expected to, who experienced traumatic, unexpected life events that completely and forever changed the course of a person's life. What we expected and did not receive. And gate five is ancestral grief. This is the sharing of grief from our ancestors over injustices and enormous amounts of suffering. It's sort of too big for us to even hold. We are the current carriers of grief, but this grief isn't just ours. Examples can be colonialism, slavery, war, and genocide. The list goes on and on in ways that our ancestors carried grief that became part of our lives too. So now I'm going to take you through how the pandemic in particular affected us through these gates. And I'm just going to remind us that all of us walked through all five gates of grief during the COVID pandemic. We continue to. These are examples I came up with, but again, please tune into yourself and what resonates with you. So gate one, everything we love, we will lose. Obviously, many people in the world lost loved ones to the pandemic. And it has reminded us how incredibly fragile and transitory human life is. Our sense of control and predictability was often shattered as we were made to face our own mortality or cope with the loss of a loved one. And I understand your pastor will be talking more to you about this one in the latter part of January. So let's dig into a little more specific. So gate two, the places that have not known love. So it's no surprise that there's been political and societal and social divisions that have just magnified and escalated during the pandemic. With the pandemic really sort of setting off this intolerance and animosity between groups that have opposing views and values. So as we sit and watch these things unfold, in our local grocery store or on the news, these experiences tap into our own past instances of being criticized, judged, or shamed. It starts to erode that sense of safety that we had, thinking about feeling safe, like the world around us generally supported our way of thinking. Right, as we watched this societal division unfold, it really tapped into our own experiences of lack of connection, of being different, and so forth. Gate three, the sorrows of the world. I pulled this graph of COVID-19 vaccinations per 100 people by World Bank Income Group. And as you can see, those with high income in the red had a significantly higher vaccination dose than low income people in the blue. And I think that when we think about sorrows of the world, this is just one tiny example, this unequal distribution of vaccines and how people living in poverty disproportionately experienced the interruption of schooling and social lives. We saw images of overwhelmed hospitals and so on. The sorrows of the world weigh on us. 8:4. What we expected and did not receive. I started with the story written by one of my patients because I think it sort of crystallized some of the very small, simple losses. But this picture here is another example. My mother-in-law is 83 now, and she was 80 when COVID struck, and we didn't dare visit her, and she lives alone. And the idea that she spent so long alone still takes my breath away when I think about it now. The dreams, the hopes, the plans that were canceled or changed, the pause on people's lives that caused us to miss so many things, weddings, funerals, time with loved ones, and so many other social rituals. My daughter's kindergarten year. And gate 5, ancestral grief. So again, I just took a snapshot. This is from Harvard, of looking at racial disparities in COVID-19, published back in 2020. This is the age-adjusted COVID-19 deaths per 100,000 Americans through August of 2020. And I don't need to describe it to you, but what we know is that COVID was just a painful reminder, an example of long-standing social inequalities. And many of us could no longer hide in our privilege and in our busyness. We could no longer ignore this. And that means we are faced with the shared history of grief in our nation, in our community, and in our family. So it doesn't matter what gate you enter or with which gate you resonate most strongly. The truth is we all end up in the shared community of the grief experience. We all end up in the shared community of the grief experience. And this is true, right? Grief spares no one. And because grief spares no one, then what if we started looking at grief as a uniting experience, as a bonding experience for all humanity? Because if we let it, grief actually has the capacity to offer us a deep sense of shared intimacy, if we let it. If we don't feel the need to hide, to lock it down. So here's your prescription. I don't actually give prescriptions, but here's your prescription. I want you to share with me, if you're comfortable, and with each other, if you're comfortable, your thoughts and emotions that came up today. What did you think about? What did you feel? And know that in week 2 of my talk, I will be discussing with you ways of coping with this grief. So Ted, I'd love to open up the floor now and let people write questions and share experiences with me and with others.
Great. I will pass around the mic in the chapel. And for folks online, you can unmute and ask your question. Or if you prefer, you can type it into the chat and Sarah will articulate it for you.
Thank you.
Anybody here?
Jay. It's Jay. I think one of the things that struck me was taking the time to think about how we went through this all together, this COVID thing, and I lost a friend because of his unwillingness to be vaccinated, and I'm still angry about that.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I'll ever get over my anger regarding that loss. Mm-hmm. It was stupid. you know, as far as I feel about that. But it's nice to know that we went through it all together.
Yes. When you think about what it means to grieve together, can you just share a little more? What is that like for you versus sitting with it alone?
I think it's probably pretty similar to military veterans and having been through an experience together, and how that healing process works for them if they articulate that experience with each other. And so I see that we have that shared commonality.
Yes.
Always beneficial.
Yes. Thank you, Jay.
Chip?
Yeah, I have one observation and one just sharing something I'm feeling. And the observation is, and I think I'm seeing much more hostility, shortness of temper, just generally among the population than I ever saw in the past, whether it's driving a car, people cutting you out or whatever. Don't know whether that's a symptom of anxiety or symptom of grief. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. And the other is that I actually feel a little guilt in that, although I caught COVID, mine was a very mild case. Financially, health-wise, everything else, although I haven't traveled, I haven't seen some family, I feel almost a little bit of guilt that I've been so lucky that I haven't been more impacted and experienced more of what some have felt or have experienced out of this whole pandemic process.
Mm. Chip, that feels so important because there's so many people in the world like you. I shared with Ted earlier, I have COVID right now. And I mean, for the most part, I feel okay. And thinking about how different that experience is for so many other people who, like Jay shared, his friend, right? People who didn't get vaccinated or couldn't get vaccinated, or people who have different health backgrounds and things. I can really relate to that feeling of guilt, and I bet other people in the room can as well.
Well, I'll just comment two things stuck out to me as you were talking. One is the slide about grief, about loss of control, and connected to that is the gate of grief, talking about how everything we love, we will lose. And the loss of control, you know, I sit there feeling in great control, thinking, well, I've got that one. That's why I'm at church, because I know that I'm not in control of everything. And I look to a higher power to say, you know, somebody else is in control and I can accept that. And I'm a big boy and I can handle that. And then I listen to that gate of grief that says we're going to lose everything we love. And I say, wow, that's a bummer. I don't know if I'm willing to accept that. And that makes me think, well, maybe you're not really facing up to how little control you really have. And it's a lot to think about.
I will say I do feel like I know I'm the bearer of heavy news this morning. I think this will sit with people for a bit. And I do challenge you all to stay connected to what comes up for you, even in the weeks, you know, between our talks. But thanks, Ted.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to express this right, but one of the things, I lost my husband, not to COVID, but it did play a part in that his treatment kept getting put off. But as I've been going through the grief of this loss, I think I'm coming out of it and getting better. And then something happens and I feel like I'm back at the beginning again.
Yes. I'm so sorry to hear about your loss. And what you talk about is exactly where we're going to pick up next week, this idea of the in and out you know, the ups and downs of the grief process and how to cope with that. So I do hope, I didn't catch your name, but I do hope you'll attend next week as well.
Anyone else? Anyone online? Bobby, Tom, John? Oh, here we go, John.
Hi, this is John. I've lost a lot of things. I'm 6'4". I can't play basketball anymore. I used to be really handsome, so people told me I'm not that way anymore. I don't remember things as well as I used to. I don't hear things as well as I used to. I don't see things as clearly sometimes as I used to. But, you know, ironically, I've never been happier because of what I now have spiritually that I didn't have in all my former incarnations or whatever you want to call them, my former periods of my life. So this is really good because I'm just now realizing all the things I've lost and the grief that I felt about it. But I also have, you know, more happiness than I've ever had. So I'm not sure how that fits into this.
I love that story. Thank you so much for sharing it and acknowledging the griefs that you have experienced yourself. And I think what you're talking about is exactly this, right? That whether you bond with others about grief or with a higher power around grief, that it is a deep shared intimacy. And when you do that, you really do reimagine your experience. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Sarah, in the online space, anybody, including you?
Nobody at this point. Thank you.
And Bobby?
Yeah, I'm remembering when it sort of all began. And well, Tom and I are retired, so we didn't have to worry about work. We don't have any little children at home. So it was almost a little bit of a holiday because we didn't have to do the things that we normally would do. And we stayed home and watched the TV and watched the numbers and all of that. But then after a while, it became clear that we really were losing connections. I mean, there's only so much. I really resonated to the child's picture of school with the little Zoom squares, because that's what our life became. All of the connections that we normally had were reduced to these little Zoom squares. And one thing I realized is that when we come to church or wherever for a meeting, there's always the time beforehand where you walk up to a friend and put your hand on their arm and say, how are you? And maybe ask a question or make a plan or something like that. That kind of connection doesn't happen over Zoom, because in there you all attend, you all start, you all stop together. And the little intimacies that we have, we lose.
Yes.
It took me about a year to figure that out, but it is true.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that the realization curve that you just talked about, right? Sort of thinking, oh, the gratitude for your situation and the gratitude for being able to connect with people via Zoom became replaced for a lot of people with the missing out on some of the other smaller things we took for granted.
So I'll articulate an ambiguous loss. And I see, I see Suzanne has something to share. Suzanne, if you want to unmute and just articulate what you want to share yourself, that's fine. Or you can send a note in the chat and Sarah can do it. Sarah, do you want to read that?
Yes. She hasn't written it yet, though.
I see something in the chat from her.
It says, may I share something?
There's a subsequent message.
Okay, I don't see it. Sorry. Can you read it, Ted?
Oh.
It's just not. She says, I'll share next week. Thank you.
Okay, I saw something pop up on the screen. That was odd, but it disappeared.
Okay, we'll look forward to it next week.
Wonderful. I'll mention something. I'm in a room full of lively people, even though there's some gray hair. So I'll just speak for myself and say that I think of late, I understand that just the simple, normal process of aging brings a sense of ambiguous loss. Just pain that you didn't have that's not going to go away. Things that you did that you're not going to be doing. Sarah's mom used to say, you know, I work just as hard as I used to, but I don't get as much done. And I'm discovering the truth of that. And that is and COVID magnified that, because the pattern of my life and the work that I do changed dramatically. And there are certain things that I did, you know, including a whole lot of travel, that I'm just not doing in the same way. And that's a loss that's really ill-defined, but it's a very real loss.
Yes. Yes. And this is Sarah. I'll have to agree. I think Ted and I both have shared this. Aging seemed to happen very quickly during COVID. There was the stress there that took its toll, even though we were like Bobby and almost felt like it was a holiday. And, you know, we didn't have to drive into the city for a meeting. Zoom was wonderful, but we both feel a lot older, and that's not so fun.
This is Jay. As I've gotten older myself, I'm 68 now. I remember Dad saying before he died that getting old is not for sissies. And I thought at the time, he may have something there, but I'm not really sensing it. But now I do.
My mom says the same thing. She's turning 81 this year, so.
Working in a pharmacy, I encountered lots of people, and I remember one of them saying to me, Riley, as he creaked out of the store, he said, don't ever get old, with a bit of irony. Anyone else?
Ted, if I could just add one more thing. I really hope that, I thank you all so much for sharing what you have shared. I didn't hear anyone talk about what happened in your emotions and in your body as we talked today. And as a health psychologist, I can't help myself but encourage you to think about that connection between mind and body. And as you begin to hold and contemplate some of these ambiguous losses that you've defined today, or long before and just shared today, please think about what that does to you physically. How does it show up in your body? Where do you feel the heaviness or the openness or the heat or the nerves, all of those things? Because connecting to mind and body is a really important point for all of us in our shared grief experience.
Robin, that's very good food for thought. And if you want, if that counts as your closing thought, that's great.
Sure.
And I'll just say thank you, thank you, thank you for putting so much thought and preparation into this and giving us so much to think about. And I'll just say, I can't wait until next week to hear the second part of what you have to present. Thank you.
Thank you so much.